Chapter 6 Secrets and Spies. Pages from Marion Halcombe's Diary.
The 18th of June. So much has happened today. Laura had lost a special brooch that I had given her on her wedding day, so this morning she set off to look for it in the woods and boathouse. While she was gone, I walked to the front gate of Blackwater. My plan was to meet the carriage that usually brought the morning post before it got to the house. I did not want Count Fosco to see me receiving a reply from the lawyer. Finally, the carriage arrived, and I was handed the letter I was expecting. I opened it and read it immediately. As I suspected, Mr. Curl was very clear that Laura should not sign anything without first sending it to him to check. He believed that the document had been written to pass some or all of Laura's £20,000 directly into her husband's pocket. When I arrived back at the house, the Count was sitting on a garden seat at the front of the house. Had he been watching me? Sir Percival Glyde had returned and was obviously still in a terrible mood. He demanded to know why Laura was not at home to sign the papers. The Count took the Baronet by the arm and quietly said, "Come with me. I'd like to talk to you about something important." Sir Percival Glyde allowed himself to be led into the library. I felt sure the "something important" was connected to me, my letter to the lawyer, and Laura. Half an hour later, the Count came to find me in the drawing room.
"Good news," he said brightly. "Sir Percival Glyde says there's no hurry now. The signature can wait. Please let Lady Glyde know when she returns."
I was very surprised by this announcement. The Count must have persuaded Sir Percival Glyde to change his mind. A few minutes later, Laura came hurrying into the room. She seemed frightened and upset.
"Oh, Marion," she cried, "I've talked to her, the person by the lake."
"But who was it?" I asked.
"Anne Catherick," she whispered. "I went to the boathouse to look for my brooch, and she was there. She told me she'd been waiting in the gardens for days, trying to find a chance to speak to me alone. She'd found my brooch in the boathouse, and she gave it back to me."
"Did you recognise her?" I asked.
"Yes, I remembered her from when we were children, and from what you'd said about her. And also, it was very odd, because I could see that she looked like me. It was like looking in the mirror at myself, but after a long illness."
"What else did she say?" I said, anxious to know more.
"She said that she was ill, and knew that she was going to die. Because of that, she wasn't afraid to come to Blackwater now. She said she hates Sir Percival Glyde because he locked her up in the asylum, and she regrets not telling me more about him before I married him. She says he is a terrible, dangerous man. She knows a big secret about him, something that he is terrified others might hear about."
"That could be really useful. Did she tell you what it was?" I asked.
"No," said Laura. "There was a noise outside, and she thought someone was listening to us. She whispered, 'Come back here tomorrow at the same time,' and then she ran away. I tried to follow her, but failed."
"You must return to the boathouse tomorrow," I said, "and I will hide in the trees."
The 19th of June. The weather today has been awful, and the events of the day even worse. Sir Percival Glyde left the house this morning despite heavy rain, and he did not say where he was going. By early afternoon, he still had not returned, and the time had come for Laura to go back to the boathouse. Thankfully, it had stopped raining. Laura set off soon after lunch, and I waited for about 20 minutes before following her. But when I reached the boathouse and carefully looked inside, it was empty. Laura was not there. My heart was beating fast in my chest, and I felt sick. I looked around, and I saw fresh footprints in the mud around the building. There were smaller ones that could have been Laura's, and much bigger ones that must have belonged to a man. I did not know what to do, so I ran back up to the house. "Have you seen Lady Glyde?" I asked the housekeeper. "Yes," the woman replied. "She came in with Sir Percival Glyde, but I'm afraid she is very upset and is in her room crying. Sir Percival Glyde is very angry with Lady Glyde's servant, Fanny. He told her she does not have a job anymore, but I don't know why. She is being sent back to Limeridge, and at this very minute is being taken to stay at the inn in the village." Fanny was a good woman and had come to Blackwater with Laura from Limeridge. She had been Laura's servant for many years. I went to see Laura in her room.
"Oh, Marion," she said through her tears. "There was someone at the boathouse yesterday, and it was the Count. Oh, I hate him. He is a spy."
At that moment, there was a knock on the bedroom door. I opened it and saw Madame Fosco standing there. She was holding a white handkerchief in her hand. "You dropped your handkerchief in the hall, Miss Halcombe," she said. Her face was extremely pale and shocked, and I saw her look past me and stare at Laura. Then she turned and walked away. I closed the door again.
"Oh, Laura, she must have heard you call the Count a spy," I whispered. "Well, he is a spy," Laura replied. "He was watching Anne Catherick and me. He must have told Sir Percival Glyde everything he saw and heard, and that's why Percival waited there today for me to return."
"Did he find Anne? Did you see her at the lake?" I asked.
"No," she said. "No one was there. I waited and looked around, and then I noticed a word written in some sandy ground outside the boathouse. It said, 'Look.' So I moved the sand with my foot, and I found a small piece of paper under it. It had writing on it, and it was signed A.C. "Anne Catherick," I said. "Then Percival came into the boathouse and took the note from me. But this is what it said, more or less. 'A tall, fat man saw me here yesterday, and I had to run away. I managed to escape, but it was too dangerous to come back here at the time I told you. Instead, I came back very early this morning to hide this note. I will find a way to see you again and tell you about your husband's awful secret.' Percival didn't believe me when I said that I didn't know where she was or what the secret was. He shouted at me and told me I would never see Fanny again." An idea suddenly came to me. "Laura, I'm sure that Count Fosco is also reading any letters that we send. I am going to write another letter to our solicitor, Mr. Curl. I'll give it secretly to Fanny to take back with her. We can trust her." "Oh, I wish I could go back to Limeridge," said Laura.
"That's actually a very good idea," I said. "I'll write to your uncle and suggest it." It was about 6 p.m. when I had written the two letters and set out to the village. It was a hot summer evening, and it felt like a thunderstorm was coming. Several carriages passed me, and a few people walking too. Once or twice, I thought I was being followed, but I think I was imagining it because I was nervous. Thankfully, poor Fanny was at the inn when I arrived there. I explained that it was very important that she posted the first letter when she reached London and gave the second one to Mr. Fairley. I was back at the house before 8 p.m. At dinner, I noticed that the Count seemed red in the face and his clothes were not as tidy as usual. Had he also been outside before dinner, or did he seem nervous just because of the heavy summer heat? At the end of the meal, Sir Percival said to the Count,
"Fosco, come out onto the veranda. I need to talk to you about an important matter."
I left them, and once I was back in my room, I thought about the events of the day. Why did Sir Percival Glyde need to speak to the Count? I wondered whether the two men were sitting on the veranda now, talking. I went to my window and slowly and quietly opened it. Not far below me, I could see the long, narrow roof of the veranda, which stretched along the whole length of the back of the house. I heard a distant cough far off to my left, where the open doors to the sitting room would be. I climbed out of my window and on to the flat veranda roof. It was very narrow, but I moved along it with small steps. I could soon hear the men's voices, and my heart was racing in my chest. I lay down and began to listen carefully to their every word. At that moment, I noticed something wet on my face. It had started to rain.
"It's very serious," the Count was saying. "It's more serious than you think. There's something you don't know about," said Sir Percival Glyde. "That doesn't surprise me. You've been acting very strangely these last few days," said the other. "But first, we need to be clear about the money situation." "It's very simple. I need thousands of pounds, and you want several hundred. And without the money, we are both finished," Sir Percival Glyde said.
"Correct. And the only way to get the money is with the help of your wife. But you have not been able to persuade her to help you. Instead, you have treated her roughly and upset her. Miss Halcombe has written to their lawyer today."
How did the Count know this? He must have followed me to the inn. Had he got the letter from Fanny? Had he opened it somehow?
"What?"
cried the baronet angrily.
"If Laura won't agree to sign the document, is there no other way to get the money?"
"No, only if she dies,"
said Sir Percival Glyde.
"Then the £3,000 a year she gets would be lost, but I would get her £20,000 of inheritance instead."
There was a horrible silence for a few moments. The rain was falling more heavily now, and my dress was quite wet. The Count spoke again.
"So, let's say that your wife died. You would immediately inherit £20,000. That's interesting. Don't you agree?"
"Fosco," said Sir Percival Glyde, "stop that talk. And if that happened, you would get £10,000 through your wife's inheritance. Don't think I have forgotten that."
"Don't be angry," said the Count quietly. "You have a serious problem, and I have found you a good answer to it. If you cannot get the money with her signature in the next 2 months, before your bills have to be paid, then you can get it with her death. So, we have talked about the money matters. Tell me about this other problem. Is it connected with Anne Catherick? I could see that you were frightened when I told you that I haven't been able to find her."
"All I will say is that if I don't find Anne Catherick, then I am a ruined man. If my secret is discovered, it would be worse than not getting the money. You saw that letter from her that I found in the sand. She knows my secret and has already talked to my wife.
Sir Percival Glyde said, anxiously, Would my wife keep that secret if she learns it?
I doubt it. She hates me, and she is in love with another man. A poor, unimportant drawing teacher called Mr. Hartwright. And who helped Anne to escape from the asylum? Mr. Hartwright. And who saw her in Cumberland? Him! He probably knows the secret too.
Where is this man now? The Count asked.
Out of the country. I had him followed from the time he left Cumberland to the moment he got on a ship that sailed to Central America.
Then we must do everything we can to find Anne Catherick. Let's speak again tomorrow, said the Count.
I heard chairs moving and the sound of steps going back inside the house. I was shocked by what I had heard and was wet through now and extremely cold. I could hardly move, but I slowly got myself back to the window and into my room. The 20th of June. It is the morning, and I have not slept. I feel extremely unwell. I am terribly cold. Or am I hot? I know that I spent hours writing down everything that happened yesterday because I did not want to forget a single word. But I cannot write any more. I am lying on the floor, and I do not know what time it is. How long have I been here? Am I still in my own room? Oh, my head hurts. I want to sleep, but I cannot. Am I ill? No, I can't be. There is too much to do. Am I dying? I'm so cold. I can't. I just can't.
Note. At this point, the words in the diary become too difficult to read, and then the writing stops.